This episode was recorded in June 2020. If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
Delighted to welcome Sean Derry to Switchbox TV. The only thing I'm a bit upset about is I thought in lockdown, you'd at least had this sort of, you know, the barnet back on, you know, growing, because everybody's growing their hair. I thought you'd come on with a headband and the long hair. Not bad.
Well, I'm going for it again, Rob, but sadly, mate, it's just the sides and the back that grow now. The top doesn't. So I'll have a big mullet like a 70s footballer again.
Listen, I feel like when I'm doing these interviews, I feel like I'm a stalker, could be watching you on YouTube, reading all about you. But you know what? My lad plays cricket for Kent. He's in the Kent Academy. So they play at Beckenham. So it must have been last in the winter, just gone. So I wandered out. He was in the hall there, and I wandered out, and I sort of wandered over to the training ground, Crystal Palace training ground. So I'm watching somebody's putting on a session. I thought, I know that fella. But I'm as blind as a bat. So you're about, you must have been about sort of 60, 70 yards away, and it's you putting on the session. Sean Derry, what's going on? How did you end up back at Palace?
I know. I mean, it's been an incredible journey, Rob, really. I suppose having finished playing football, I finished 1 week playing. I was on loan at Millwall. I was contracted at QPR. And listen, as it often happens, it comes to an end. And I went on loan to Millwall. And after a couple of months there, the Notts County job came up, and I was just doing one of my licences, my A licence. And with Nottingham being my home city, I wanted the opportunity to experience an interview, really, just to see what would happen, you know, just to see what the process looked like. Jolene and the kids, my wife and the kids, they'd gone on holiday on the Saturday. By the time they came back from Portugal, I was the Notts County manager. So it all kind of... My life took a massive swing within about a week at 35. And obviously, you know, Notts County and then Cambridge and Oxford. And I find my way back to what's now home, which is Kent, and back at Crystal Palace with the academy. So it's been a crazy 7 years, Rob.
Tell me though, because you've experienced management. I mean, we talk about your playing career a bit, but you've experienced management. I mean, every manager I know is they're bitten, the bug is there. I'm not saying it's a come down, but why academy? How? I mean, obviously it's a massively important role, but why, or how does that square with being a manager to being an academy manager?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's something that I've really thought long and hard about. I suppose when I was 35 and having no experience of perhaps doing the junior roles or kind of making your way up the ladder step by step, I was thrown into management at the top end with Notts County and thoroughly enjoyed it. And, you know, looking back at my time at Notts County, it was a hugely valuable experience for me. And I felt like a manager. I really did. And then once again, another opportunity arose at Cambridge, and two really good experiences, a long time managing at Notts County in 16, 17 months, 2.5 years at Cambridge. But respectfully, Rob, I had to make a decision. I had to make the decision of, do I just pigeonhole myself at lower level management, which is absolutely fine, you know, brilliant level to manage at, absolutely no doubt about it. Or do I kind of take a different journey and look at potentially what something else could deliver? And that's where, you know, the opportunity to go and support Carl Robinson as an assistant at Oxford, and then come and, you know, get back involved at a football club that, you know, I really care about with Crystal Palace. I wanted to prove to people that, you know, I'm not just the manager. I can work in a multidisciplinary team, and I can support people and work with young players as well. And listen, I'm 42, Rob. You know, I'm not 52, 62. I'm still relatively young in the game, and I just wanted to go and experience something very different to what the last 6 years had looked like.
Well, how's your dealing with young players changed from your coaches when you were a young player? How's it changed?
Yeah, chalk and cheese, Bob. Yeah, chalk and cheese. If I look back at my time at Notts County as a young player, 16 to 18, some of the stories I could tell you back then, about back then, Rob, I think if you was a manager nowadays, you'd be locked up, never mind thrown out the game. I think you'd be in a prison.
Yeah,
sat there
for, I'm sure.
But listen, that was the game back then. And what that taught me was a lot of valuable lessons. And what I've got to try and manipulate to everybody's advantages is in the modern day, you know, I've got to tell them a similar story, but show them very differently. You know, we're in a modern day now where everybody is treated very differently. And rightly so, you know, we're all individual, Rob. And one size doesn't fit all no more. You know, it's a case of having to really get to know the individual and kind of put in a place a development plan that suits them as opposed to just suits everybody. And that's the challenge, and that's something that, you know, I'm still learning every day with.
Has football changed from you being 18 to you 42 now? Has the game changed?
Yeah, I would say the game's changed dramatically in the last 10 years, never mind since I was a 16, 18-year-old. You know, the game now is it's an all-encompassing global brand that not just the Premier League needs to accept and understand, which they do, but even the lower levels, you know, Leagues 1, Leagues 2, the Conference, you know, you're getting different types of personalities coming into the game. And you've got to treat them all, like I've just said, very, very individual. The game, as in the game itself, I feel it's got quicker. I think it's become more technical. It's a lot more intense to perhaps. I'm not saying the intensities wasn't there in the, you know, in the moments when I played as a young player, but it's definitely quicker, Rob. It's definitely quicker.
I've got to say, you get labelled as old. I don't enjoy it as much these days from the point of view as my own view was a really good crunching tackle could lift a crowd, could change a game. I mean, I did an interview with Andy Gray and Peter Reid about 1985, Everton against Bayern Munich, and I watched that game back. It's like watching a different sport. But blooming heck, it was intense, it was physical. And I think that little bit has gone out of the game, and I personally miss it.
Yeah, I think if you was to ask me the question now, would my style of play, the way, you know, that I was as a footballer throughout them best part of 20 years, would that style have taken me to the levels that I actually played at as a, you know, as a, albeit a small Premier League player for 3 years and then, you know, a Championship player for the vast majority of my career? Possibly not, Rob. Possibly not. You know, I think you're right. I think the value of a tough, uncompromising tackle is perhaps overlooked in the modern day. But it's like most sports, Rob, you know, they kind of, it takes little twists. And I suppose what I'd like to bring into the lads I'm teaching at Crystal Palace is you can still coach that. You can still acknowledge that's part of the game. And I'm hopeful that we don't lose sight of that, because you're right. You know, an uncompromising tackle sure does lift the crowd. And I still think there's value for that, Rob.
Well, you've had some fantastic managers. Everybody was saying Neil Warnock, you had Tony Pulis, Ian Dowie. Do you take anything, or what do you take from the experiences you had as a player, excuse me, into your own coaching from those guys?
Yeah, it's a brilliant question. I think you have to take, you know, you have to take something from all of them, good, bad, and indifferent. You know, it's not just all the good things. And what you can't do is you can't become a replica of somebody else, because that's them and I'm me. You know, I have to be me, and I have to make sure that, you know, my style is unique to what I'm comfortable with. But at the same time, I've had some fantastic managers over the years, and I suppose people will always look at Neil Warnock as being that shining light of the type of person that I really played for. But along the way, I mean, I was only having this conversation the other day. Somebody from a completely different angle is Graham Ricks. You know, Graham Ricks was my manager down at Portsmouth. And just the way that he communicated with everybody, you know, whether that's from, you know, the chief exec or the owner or the chairman, whoever it's going to be, all the way through the playing side, all the way down to the cleaners and, you know, the tea lady, he was on point. He was the best communicator I've ever worked with. And that's something that's, I think, becomes more paramount in today's football, is you've got to be able to speak to people.
Do you get a chance to speak to Roy?
I do, yeah. I mean, because we're both on different sites as well, it's somewhat slightly harder than perhaps sharing that same training ground day in, day out. But Roy's been brilliant. You know, he's that beacon of knowledge, isn't he? He's that experienced guy that seen it, done it, and got too many T-shirts to wear them every day. He's a brilliant example of what leadership looks like in my eyes. He's a quiet leader, but he has got that ruthless side of him that keeps him in the game for as long as it has. But I do speak to him, and albeit I don't speak to him every day, but when I do get opportunities to speak, I more listen than speak, Rob. He's one of them guys that you just sit and you sit down and you take in what he's telling you.
I mean, I was privileged enough to sit in TV studios with, you know, some of the great, the good, and whoever, footballers, managers. I love listening. I love listening to what they say. When you're on coaching courses, when you're around people, is that something you consciously do as if learning, taking bits from everybody, if you like?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was at Notts, like I say, first-time manager, the big thing for me, I had to get my support staff around me. And they needed to have different qualities than what I had. And they needed to have experience of situations, because I was just dipping my toe in the water. This is my first experience. So I brought in alongside me Greg Abbott, who'd been the manager at Carlisle for 5 years. Somebody who I'd known throughout my time playing. He was a brilliant assistant for me. Paul Hart came as my head of academy at Notts County. You know, Paul's just an incredible guy. Just an unbelievable personality, an unbelievable guidance for me. Mick Housall, who again had a long distinguished coaching career. So I used to have these guys alongside me, and I'd always say, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we're going to meet in the manager's room for an hour, and we're just going to have a cup of tea, and we're going to share stories and listen. And do you know what, Rob? I never said anything. I just sat there and I listened. And they were the best moments of my time at Notts County. I've got to say, sitting in that room, sharing stories with them guys were brilliant for me. Brilliant times.
What was the best period of your footballing career?
Oh, wow. Cole, what a question that is.
Very all right, we could be here all day with that, to be fair, but you know what I mean.
I know. I mean, again, I was having this... Because lockdowns took place and, you know... People ring you from years back. You go back. You're always looking back at your moments. And it's been a great 3 months in many ways, you know, because I can kind of look back on some of these some of these times. I was really privileged to play for some great football clubs. And the clubs I played for, they were working class clubs, Rob. Mm. They really were, you know. The Crystal Palaces, the QPRs, the Leeds Uniteds, the Portsmouths, Sheffield Uniteds, just to name a few of the clubs that I've played for. And I was really lucky that I seemed to have a bond with the fans of the football club. And I think because the way that I approached the game and, you know, I appreciated the game in terms of what the game was, I had some great times at many clubs. For me, pulling on the jersey for Leeds United, you know, that mighty white shirt, I never thought I would play for a club like that. You know, all the way watching football as a kid, playing football as a young player. And I only played for Leeds because they fell out of the Premier League. I would have never have played for Leeds United if they'd have been a Premier League football club. So to pull on that mighty white jersey was beyond special for me. It was brilliant.
A quick run through, with all these interviews, I sort of throw these in. Who's the best player you played with?
I suppose the best player for me, I've got to split it because of the year we had at QPR with a Delta Reps. I've never seen individual skill like it. I spoke to Adele a couple of weeks ago and he's now at Benfica. He should have played for Barcelona or Real Madrid. He did. But one particular player who did play for them clubs was Robert Prosinecki at Portsmouth. Prosinecki came as a gift from the chairman. Milan Mandarić turned up, opened this massive limousine, and out popped Rob, came out, and I'm thinking, I know you. I know this guy. This guy's special. And for a good 6 to 8 months, I was blown away by Prosinecki. He was just like the godfather. He really was. And when he done his Cruyff turns or his shimmies on the pitch, sent everyone for a sandwich, Robbie, probably including his teammates, me included. It was unbelievable. It was brilliant.
Adel Taarabt's following you. Isn't he playing holding midfield? He's been learning from you.
Who'd have thought? He's
holding midfield, sticking his foot in, he's booting everybody. He's got rid of all the skill. You've taught him everything he knows.
Unbelievable. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought? And that goes with experience, you know. Adele was a 10. He was a number 10, you know. He only came to life in the final third. We played with 10 men in them first two thirds, Rob. It was unbelievable.
Okay. Toughest opponent.
Oh, wow. Toughest opponent. I mean, again, I only played in them Premier League, in that Premier League for two and a bit seasons. So to play in that level, you know, up against the likes of Lampard and Gerrard's was unbelievable. But the one person who I never got close to, and I mean I never got close to him on the pitch, was Paul Scholes. I played against Paul Scholes when he'd come out of retirement. So he was out of the game for them 6-9 months, however long he was. And then I played against him at Old Trafford. Robbie never gave a ball away. He was absolutely pinpoint to the end degree. He could just absolutely run a game just from that little pivot position in the centre circle. He was the best player I'd ever seen. The best player I'd ever seen.
You see, I've had this discussion with the likes of Chris Waddle and all this kind of thing down there. You know, when you say you were up, not me, but say you're up against Lionel Messi, you always say, why doesn't somebody just go, and I don't mean this badly, but why doesn't somebody just go and absolutely boot him? But then they go, you can't get near him. And I even at my level, I could boot anybody. I couldn't play, but I could boot people. Why couldn't you just go and nail Paul Scholes? What is it about a player that's that good that you can't actually get near him?
He was two pages in front of everyone, Rob. You know, he just knew he could read the game so cleverly. He knew if he was being pressed, he'd just play one touch. And his one touch was as good as three touches for anybody else. His first touch was absolutely pinpoint. So if you want to go and press him, he'd just sit back that extra 5-10 yards and he'd encourage that press. And then he'd play around the corner and he'd find a little pocket turn if Rooney dropped into that little pocket. Or if one of the wide men coming from an outside to an inside position, he could run a football pitch just by his brain. And I suppose to answer your question, that's what differentiates the top players from the absolute great players. Paul Scholes, for me, is an absolute great top player. When you hear players like Xavi and Iniesta completely say he's the best, he's got to be the best, Rob.
How did you find it, that jump up? I mean, you played in the Champ. You had an unbelievable career. Is it a massive gap to the Premier League? Is it? And what is it? What determines that gap? You know, there's some fantastic players in the Championship, but you know, what is it separates it?
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed the Premier League because I mean, I made my way into the Premier League at 32. I played in there a bit part for Crystal Palace at 26, but never looked at myself as a Premier League player at all until at 32 I was mixing it with the big boys. I was a holding midfielder, so I think the difference for me, because I was so sat so deeply, I had time because you don't get pressed like you do in the Championship, mm-hmm. in the Premier League. You know, there's a deep block all the time and the challenge is, can you break down your opponent in the final third? So I kind of enjoyed my time in the Premier League.
Yeah.
When I came out of the Premier League at 35 and I went and played at Millwall and I was getting pressed all the time, I realised then my days are numbered. I couldn't move around the football pitch because, you know, this challenge was completely different than what I'd experienced over the last 2 years at the highest level. Flip me into a forward position. I think the challenges as of a forward Premier League player are different to what the forwards are in the Championship, because you've got to be ruthless in the Premier League. You might only get one chance in the game. You've got to put it away. You might get three chances in a game in the Championship and you might miss two and score one and you're absolutely lauded as a player. You don't get them opportunities in the Premier League run.
Is Joey Barton misunderstood?
Yes and no. Yes and no. You know, he's, you know, sometimes, and Joey will accept that he's been in and around controversial situations that he could have done without. But I got to know Joey on a different level. And, you know, even to this day now, we speak to each other on that different level. I like him a lot. I think he carries values in many ways of his personality that are there to be treasured. And I think in other certain parts of his makeup, he'll openly accept that he's flawed. But that makes him the individual that Joey Barton is. I like him a lot, Rob. And I enjoyed my time spent not just playing on the same pitch as Joey, but the time spent off the football pitch speaking about different things that 99% of other people don't get about Joey Barton.
Who's your best pal in football? I know it's very transitionary, isn't it? You sort of spend time at different places and what have you. Have you got a special mate you've always keep in touch with?
Yeah, I've got some. Football's been brilliant for me. It's been, you know, the main absolute fulcrum of my life. You know, this is where all my relationships have been forged from. It's been football. You know, as a young kid, I was a footballer. I always classed myself as a footballer at 9, 10 years old. So all my mates have come through. My best friend is a guy called James Hunt, who had a career in the lower levels. He's my best pal, and you know, I love him with all my life. But the likes of Clint Hill, Jamie Mackie, Peter Crouch, people like that, you know, really good play. I mean, I lost one of my best friends in Justin Edinburgh last year.
Absolutely, Justin, tragically.
And so when you tragically lose a friend, whether it's from football or not, you know, it's been a tough year, Rob, you know, when you think about losing friends. And I suppose times like this, you know, when you're locked away, it gives you a lot of time to think about them friendships.
Fantastic talking to you. When do you start back? When does it all get going again?
Yeah, we're looking to get back on the grass perhaps at the start of next month, Rob. It's been of course everyone wants the Premier League to and the Football League and all, you know, I get that, but we're not there yet. So in terms of the, you know, the junior levels, we're not gonna go back until next month.
Listen, when's Jolene's next gig? That's what I wanna, that's the only reason I called you up. Never mind your football career. What about your wife's singing career? That's much more important. When's she performing next?
You know what, Rob, it's incredible, really. You know, everyone's affected by this. Everybody. And it's, you know, like Ronan and the guys from the Bible Codes and Jolene, you know, they're all very close. They've got a brilliant bond. They really have. And I feel for these guys, you know, all their gigs got taken away within 48 hours. And their work just got ripped away from them. And Jolene's the same, you know. She lost all her work throughout the rest of the year. So thankfully she's working, doing a different job at this moment in time. But she misses her music every day. And we'll all be delighted, won't we, when we're all able to get back and a little bit more normality takes place and we can all enjoy a beer and watching the bands.
Fantastic, mate. I can't wait for it. Listen, Sean, lovely to talk to you. Hopefully we meet in person very soon as well. I'd love to sit down and have a beer with you. But thanks for joining us, pal. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, mate. Take care. Take care of yourself, Rob.
See you, Sean.